Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna,
Today on a, let me say, on a subject which I feel is very important for someone who wants to increase his relationship to Lord Krishna. And it's a philosophical question which I would like to raise today, and I would like to answer the question. I think it is very relevant, and I really hope that you, as my esteemed audience, will find a lot of, let me say, inspiration for your own spiritual sadhana. The question I would like to raise today is, Can Krishna fulfill my individual desire for love? I think we all are aware by now that deep within us there is a desire to love and also to be loved. And it is known if a person loves properly and feels properly loved, then he or she is satisfied in the life. A little while ago I gave a couple of lectures both in the Veda Academy and in Goloka Dham, where I spoke about emotional fulfillment in Krishna consciousness. And one of the important points was that when we can somehow direct our attention on Lord Krishna and make him the subject of our emotion, then we are satisfied. There is one spiritual school whose one of the main seat is just 2.5 kilometers from here. It's the Vallabha Sampradaya. They have deities in their houses. The devotees there don't show these deities to anyone. You can't see them because they have made Krishna the member of their household, and they somehow transfer all their emotions on Krishna. When they want something, they pray to Krishna, please give me. When they are angry at Krishna, why didn't you give this to me? And the teaching of this spiritual school is that yes, if you somehow or other get Krishna into your thoughts, either in sweet prayers or with anger, you will purify your mind in such a way, or Krishna will purify your mind in such a way that you will be very happy. Now, we in our school are not really doing becoming angry at Krishna. Sometimes maybe a devotee will become angry at Krishna for some time. He will say, oh, why do you always make it so difficult? We are told to more put our loving propensity to Krishna. Bhakti, according to Rupa Goswami, should be favorable, anushilanam. like this, we should love Krishna, not become angry at him. Anyways, I was talking to the devotees that, my dear devotees, try to put Krishna into your life and put your emotions on Krishna. And I saw that devotees were not satisfied with this presentation. In Germany, the devotees are very critical at the moment still, and I think that is also all right. Another phase will come. They said it's not possible for us to direct our emotions to Krishna because we are so far away from Krishna. Our emotions bring us usually away from Krishna. So how can you tell us to somehow direct them to Krishna? This is not our level of advancement. So I would like to raise now again the question. My dear audience, how do you feel about this question? Can Krishna fulfill my individual desire for love? Like when I'm unsatisfied, can I just feel something lacking inside of me? Can I just somehow think of Krishna and then I'm satisfied? Maybe we should ask another question. This will be soul-searching question. What is your relationship at the moment to Krishna? How do you think of Krishna at the moment? Please think for a moment. Who is Krishna for you? questions. Or maybe we can even ask another question. We are told Govardhan is Krishna. What is your relation to Govardhan? Look at Govardhan for a moment. How do you see him? Is he a mystical hill? What do you see when you see Govardhan? I know after lunch this is not easy to give answers to this. But in case you want to think again about these questions, when the lunch is digested, you are welcome to do so. Two of our acharyas have dealt with the question if Krishna is able to make a relationship to me in this world. The first I would like to quote is Jiva Goswami, and the second is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Jiva Goswami says, it is not possible for Krishna to be compassionate to his devotees because Krishna does not suffer like his devotees. Therefore, Krishna does not understand his devotees in the way it is necessary. See, when you want to help someone, you have to understand his misery somehow and feel for the misery. But Krishna, Jiva Goswami says, is engaged in Leela, and he is not at all, he's not personally compassionate towards the fallen souls when they pray to him. What Krishna has done is, he has given the power of compassion to his Vaishnava servants, his devotees, who can somehow understand the sufferings of the conditioned souls, because they are in a human body and they have also experienced similar sufferings, and therefore they can be compassionate with the souls. Jiva Goswami's answer. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives another answer, which is also absolutely correct. He asked a slightly different question, but it is also about the relationship between Krishna and his devotees in this world. He asked the question, does Krishna personally hear the prayers which are addressed to him? Or is it more that the super soul, the Krishna as the super soul, listens to the prayers? When I, for instance, say, my dear Lord, give me a Mercedes Benz. That's a car. Give me a new car. Does Krishna hear this? Or does the super soul hear and answer it? I think I shouldn't put this as an example. My dear Krishna, give me a car. But better, my dear, because I don't know how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur would answer this. But a devotee who sincerely turns to Krishna, my dear Lord Krishna, give me taste in chanting, for instance, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Does Krishna hear this or the super soul? Krishna, who is engaged in Leela, does he go perk up his ears? Oh yeah, Jai Gopal has asked me to give him taste for chanting Hare Krishna. This is a question of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he answers the question in a very, very, very nice way. I mean, he speaks so much to the heart when he answers the question. He says, if Krishna, who is addressed as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, answers the questions of his devotees, it would mean that he thinks he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Krishna does not think he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he is in Vrindavan. Krishna thinks, oh, I'm the child of Yashoda. Therefore, he likes the name Yashoda Nandan so much. I'm the child. And Krishna feels very hungry for the milk of Mother Yashoda. and gets very disturbed when Mother Yashoda puts him down in the midst of feeding him, breastfeeding him, and so on and so forth. And Krishna becomes very, very afraid when Mother Yashoda finds out he has stolen yogurt and broken the butter pots, and stands with him with a raised stick. Krishna is so afraid that he starts to cry, and he cries so much that his chest begins to shake, and the diamond pearls on it begin to jump up and down. Now, Krishna doesn't think at that time, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can beat me with a stick? No, he fully is in the understanding that he is the son of Mother Yashoda, and has forgotten that he is the Supreme Personality who wields unlimited powers. And Krishna, this is very important, doesn't just play a role like an actor, that yes, I know I'm God, but to play the Leela here, I play that I'm a little afraid. Oh yeah, Mother, yes, this is very terrible. Yes, yes, no, no. He is fully, he has forgotten. The energy which has helped him to forget is his own bewildering pastime energy. Now, then the question Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur asks is, okay, if Krishna has forgotten that he is God, then he cannot answer prayers which are addressed to him as God. So there must be another feature, that is the Paramatma who does this. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, no, it's not the Super Soul who answers our prayers. It is, although Krishna is covered by his forgetful pastime, or his pastime energy, which makes him forget, at the same time, simultaneously, he has another energy which makes him savagya. So he savagya means he knows everything. And so at the same time he has forgotten and not forgotten. And when the devotee prays to Lord Krishna, then it is Lord Krishna who picks it up in his savagya aspect, so to say. Then answers the prayer in this aspect. It is fully Krishna who answers, but in a different thinking modus, so to say, not in the Leela modus. So in this way, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has also given credence to Jiva Goswami's answer that yes, Krishna is too much involved in Leela and has no connection with the devotees in the world. So Krishna is involved in his Leela, yes, that's correct, and in this form he continues to play his Leela and runs away from Mother Yashoda while the devotees pray to him. But in another aspect, Krishna simultaneously hears the prayers of his devotees and answers them. These are two answers from the Goswamis which come. So in the Bhagavad Gita also Lord Krishna says that he can reciprocate with his devotees in this world. He says, yeya tamang prapatyante tangstataiva bhajamyaham. You all know this shloka. In the degree someone surrenders unto me, I answer them. I think this verse, in the 4th chapter, text 11 of the Gita, that yes, Krishna answers our prayers, is important. Sometimes a devotee in our level feels a certain type of insecurity. He has not yet developed his relationship with Lord Krishna very strongly, he therefore doesn't feel a spiritual rasa. But he is also not in material life. He's somewhere in nobody's land. I don't know if you ever have crossed the Turkish border and went into Persia. There is about 1 kilometer between Persia and Turkey, wild Turkey, which is called nobody's land. And there many gangsters live who can do with you anything. There is no police which comes to your help. So it's not defined. It's neither Persian land nor is it Turkish land. It's nobody's land. So sometimes a devotee who is in Krishna consciousness and has not yet developed his loving relationship with Krishna feels also in nobody's land. And in this nobody's land, some gangsters can come, lust, greed, envy, and tuck at him. And there is he cannot go to any material security any longer and ask them, I have a problem. He cannot explain his problem to the psychologists. The psychologists wouldn't know how to deal with him. It's often said a devotee who is experiencing spiritual, some spiritual awakening, you know, when you ask psychology about what is happening, they will say schizophrenia. He develops another persona than is known. You will be shocked to hear that many spiritual, or most of the spiritual phenomena which stem from some type of spiritual experiences have been classified by modern psychology as a nervous disorder. There is not yet any science where they can bring this. For instance, this intense hopelessness which sometimes a devotee feels, oh Krishna, I'm not here and I'm not there. I wish to come closer to you, but is there any chance? If you would go with this to the psychologist, he would say, poor soul, take some medicines to calm your mind down. So on. A devotee feels sometimes hopeless because he cannot be understood by the material world. And he has not yet put his toe into the spiritual world, what to speak of on foot and so on. He's an in-betweener. And therefore, his mood sometimes is, how can I be satisfied? Sometimes he tries in chanting to be a little bit satisfied. He tries to have more devotional practice to be a little bit more satisfied, but it seems to not work. Then he goes to the material world. He does some material diversions which are still within the rules and regulations, and he feels also not fulfilled. So the question which I raise today is, can Krishna fulfill my desires for love and for fulfillment? Is, I believe, very, very relevant. So I will now try to answer this question a little bit. My first point is that Krishna is known as a person who evokes emotions. He does not want forced love. When he also sees that his devotee forces himself with his spiritual practice, he is not so extremely satisfied yet. It's better than being indifferent to spiritual advancement, but a forced devotion or forced love is not really love. So Krishna will do something to bring out the love of his devotees, so that the devotees give their love voluntarily and sweetly to him, not out of fear. I want to give you an example from the spiritual world, and then I will give you an example from the devotees here in the material world. My example is Rukmini. Once Krishna met his beloved wife, Rukmini, she is the foremost of his queens, and said to her, Rukmini, I have to tell you something. Actually, I married you because I wanted to upset my enemies. My enemies, Shishupala and all the other kings, wanted to have you so badly that on your marriage day, I decided to snap you away from them, because they have given me a lot of bad names and so on, and I thought revenge is sweet. So I just did this because I wanted to... I married you because of my enemies, not so much because of you. Actually, I don't really love you, and I must really tell you very honestly, we are not a good match. I am a very, very crafty person, and you are very high class. I'm very low. You know, let me speak my heart very... Rukmini heard this. Imagine, Aniruddhaji, you are married. You would one day say to your wife, my dear Devi, I really didn't marry you because of you, you know. There were some other brahmacharis who were also interested in you, and I didn't like them, and I wanted to be the first one to give them a your Devi would certainly require some extra sweets to feel well after such a statement. It would be a serious blow to the relationship. So Rukmini felt, it's described in Krishna book, she felt like a plantain tree which was felled by a strong storm. Boom! And fell down and fainted. She couldn't say anything to Krishna. She's very submissive, and she fell down. So at that moment Krishna felt, oh, I went a little bit too far. And he manifested two extra arms. With one set of arms, he caught Rukmini so that she would not fall on the floor. And with the two extra arms, he smoothed her hair, because her hair was in disarray from the severe shock. Krishna, this is one example how Krishna wanted to evoke the extra loving emotions of Rukmini. Rukmini thought... He thought, okay, Rukmini is so submissive and always says yes and yes and yes, and I want to see more of her emotions, more of her loving emotions towards me. So Krishna does the same thing to the devotees in the material world. And he speaks something very nice about his reciprocation to the gopis, and I feel the way Prabhupada translates it and brings it, it is addressed directly also to us. You must know, Krishna had disappeared from the Rasa dance area, and the gopis had madly searched for him until finally they all came to the bank of the Yamuna and began in their utmost desperation that Krishna had left them. They sang the holy names, and after some time Krishna reappeared before them, and the gopis asked him a question about love. What was his understanding of love? Really nice. And Krishna answered to the question. He said, my dear friends, you might be aggrieved by my words and acts, but you must know that sometimes I do not reciprocate my devotees' dealings with me. My devotees are very much attached to me, but sometimes I do not reciprocate their feelings properly in order to increase their love for me more and more. You will feel this very, very quickly when you chant more rounds. There will be times where you go through the desert and where you feel, where is Krishna? Where is my Krishna? You will even sometimes when you go to Vrindavan, you might be sitting in the midst of the holy dham at the side of Giriraj, but you might not be there. You might feel, oh, I hope it's soon over. I'm anyways not an Indian fan. I hope I'm soon back in the land of soft drinks called Krishna Balaram Mandir. And then can speak some interesting things with interesting people and so on. Sometimes in the midst of spiritual activities, you might feel like being in a desert. My dear devotees, this might be the most important time in your spiritual life, where you really do not feel anything, but where you continue with your spiritual practice. Especially when you chant, you might feel so alone. You might be so left alone. You might feel that Krishna is so far away. And I don't mean in the mood of Chaitanya, who said, I'm Govinda Virahename, I'm totally separated from you. No, no. You might feel realistically, I'm thinking of sex, drugs and rock and roll while I'm here chanting, and you know, I'm really separated, I'm in Maya, and so on. And at this time, some real deep work can take place. When you're not practicing Krishna consciousness because you enjoy it, but you continue to practice it because you want to give enjoyment to Krishna and show him that you are not indifferent to his mercy. So, therefore, Krishna says he sometimes doesn't reciprocate the feelings of his devotees properly in order to increase their love for me more and more. One Christian thinker who wrote about the dark night of the soul said, in the beginning, God gives the sadaka or the devotee presence, and then at one stage he doesn't give presence any longer because he wants to see that the devotee comes not for him to him because of presence but because of himself. That is Johannes von Kreuz who says like this. It's a very famous literature which spiritual people know all in all denominations. He continues, Krishna continues, if I can very easily be approached by the devotees, they might think, oh, Krishna is so easily available. So sometimes I do not respond. If a person has no money but after some time accumulates some wealth and then loses it, he will think of the lost property 24 hours a day. Similarly, in order to increase the love of my devotees, sometimes I appear to be lost to them. And instead of forgetting me, they feel their loving sentiments for me increase. And then Krishna turns directly, this was a general statement, to all the devotees. Now he turns directly to the gopis. My dear friends, do not think for a moment that I have been dealing with you as I do with ordinary devotees. I know what you are. You have forsaken all kinds of social and religious obligations. You have given up all connections with your parents. without caring for social convention and religious obligations. You have come to me and loved me, and I am so much obliged to you that I cannot treat you as ordinary devotees. Do not think that I was away from you. I was near to you. I was simply seeing how much you were anxious for me in my absence. So please do not try to find fault with me. I was thinking of this quotation when Burijan Prabhu said in one of his classes that you can check your advancement by the question, where do I take shelter when Krishna is not there? Was it something like this, Burijan Prabhu? Can you please quote yourself exactly? Where do you take shelter when you don't get what you want, when your mind doesn't get? So that's a very, very important question also for Krishna. It's not also another question which is important for us alone. Krishna also wants to see that. Where does my devotee take shelter when he doesn't get what he wants? Then the real wealth of the devotee will show his Shraddha. We may have so much knowledge which we have read and which we have imprisoned in our head, but where is our Shraddha in Krishna? This is very important. It's not that only although in the beginning there must be Shraddha. Shraddha is supposed to become firmer and firmer and firmer and turn to Nishtha, that is firm, unremovable faith. Huh? So Krishna sometimes hides himself, for instance during prolonged hours of japa, during kirtan, or he hides himself in our life. But with this hiding, Krishna wants to evoke loving sentiments in us. He wants to increase, he wants to see a reaction in his devotees that no matter what, my Lord, I'm your man or I'm your woman. It is this, in other words, what I want to highlight here is something which all the devotees will get mad at me, but it doesn't matter. I'm not afraid. The blissfulness of struggle in Krishna consciousness. Krishna likes when his devotees struggle for him. And we should, as devotees, lovingly struggle for our Lord. Show him. Burijan Prabhu read in this seminar and last year also a nice quotation which I will just summarize here or bring a little bit for. When Krishna receives his devotee in the spiritual world with a loving embrace, he whispers in his ear, "O my best devotee, many births you have performed austerities to attain me. For the sake of my service, you have endured untold miseries such as cold, wind, hunger, thirst and pain. Maintaining your life by begging, you tolerated countless insults and abuses from other men. In return for all your sacrifice, I'm unable to give you anything. I have simply become your debtor. Though I am unconquerable, today I have certainly been conquered by you. Now I am taking shelter of the creeper of your excellent character and gentle conduct." Do you follow? Krishna says, "Thank you that you have struggled for me." Krishna likes this. He likes to see it. Just think for a moment that there is someone who struggles and for you. How would you feel? Someone who does everything to please you. You would feel so much indebted to this person. You would feel so much valued by the person. That you would sometimes in the night wake up and you will cry loving tears for that person. Every one of you has had this experience of a person who loved him so much that he was willing to undergo anything and everything for that pleasure. Jiva Goswami gives us an example of the devotee in this world. He speaks of a father who lives in a very poverty-stricken area, and then on the land, and then voluntarily he goes in the city to work for his wife and his little boy in the city. He may live in one corner with 20 other people, in a corner in a room, you know, with 20 people, and he works in a factory, and he only works and works and sends some rupees home in the hope that may my little son, who lives on the in a poverty-stricken area, may he drink milk, so that my wife can afford to bring some milk to him. You know, when the son grows up, he will never forget the sacrifice of his loving father. You know, it will never happen. So, in the same way, Lord Krishna receives the devotee struggle here in this world with great intention. I know that Prabhupada, as Krishna's representative, was sometimes crying tears of gratitude for the service of his disciples. He would sometimes say to others, "See how much they love me." So the devotee, by his sincere service, even when Krishna hides, and the devotee still continues to give service, then Krishna is conquered. He says this here. He is, although I'm unconquerable, I am conquered. If you wish to read this particular place from the Krishna book, it is, my dear devotees, it has given me many, many times throughout the last 7 years, which were very bad years for me. I mean, bad. I had so many disappointments. I was always reading this and felt happy in Krishna consciousness. It's you can find it in the 32nd chapter of Krishna book, entitled Krishna Returns to the Gopis, and it's not the last paragraph, but the paragraph before the last paragraph. You will find it. You are intelligent Vaishnavas. I feel when a devotee wants to feel Krishna's love and so on, very often the devotee comes to this desert, you know, of his spiritual life, and then he doesn't struggle because he has not amassed enough shraddha, maybe, but turns to the material energy for solace. This is the cardinal mistake. When we are unfulfilled, we turn to the material energy. When you are unfulfilled, there is another response which you should do, a response which has been penned down by the enlightened pen of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The following should be considered. When devotees practice devotional service under the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, they engage their ears and other senses in acts of pure devotion by hearing and chanting about Krishna, remembering him, offering obeisances, and personally serving his deity form. Thus the devotees make the Lord's transcendental qualities the objects of their senses, as stated by the Lord himself. Nirguno mat apashraya. The devotees who take shelter of Krishna transcend the material modes. Yet, now, Srila Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur mentions those devotees who make that cardinal mistake. Yet sometimes the devotees may take as their sense objects mundane sounds and tastes, and that is material. Thus a devotee's body can have two aspects, transcendental and material. I feel so much about this that I want to make this clear to you. Here is, on the right side towards Govardhan, the transcendental aspect, or the transcendental body of the devotee. Nirguna. And here is simultaneously the material aspect. We can call this in contemporary literary word, here is Dr. Jekyll and here is Mr. Hyde. in case you... So, you need to make the choice in your life whom of the two you give food. When you give the transcendental aspect of your personality food by seeing Krishna, deity form, by going to the kirtan, by circumambulating Govardhan, that will grow more and more. But if you choose to give Mr. Hyde his food, that is the material aspect, by supplying material sense objects, he will grow. And the transcendental aspect will go down. Is it clear with this simple hand theater? Those who eat only a little food will derive a little satisfaction, a little nourishment and slight relief from hunger. Similarly, those who perform only a little hearing and chanting about Krishna will attain a little bhakti, some realization of the Lord and a little detachment. My dear devotees, give your transcendental aspect food, sufficient food, that it becomes strong. And even if you don't have any taste, because you are materially covered by the jaundice of ignorance, spoon feed doses which you can work at. Spoon feed, in other words, when you have little taste, don't try to become the big Bhajanandi from today to tomorrow. Just give little more doses as you can handle and increase the doses so that you can gradually sit down before a full feast of the holy name. That is chanting like Haridas Thakur. That is very important, this rule. Don't remain hungry and unfulfilled. And, you know, unfortunately we live in a world where without our direct planning we always take material sense impressions in. Yes. It's very interesting that Srila Prabhupada once was asked, gave a very interesting answer to the devotee said to him, when Prabhupada, when we are chanting, sometimes we see, we have all material thoughts in our mind. What should we do? Or how do we understand that these thoughts come up? Do you sometimes see this when you chant? The cinema is on, the cinema of the material world. And you think, well, what is here going on? What psychological phenomena, please, do I experience at this moment? And Prabhupada answered it like this. He said, it's the super soul who gives you these impressions, to make you aware that now you have to choose, do you want material life or spiritual life? Do you want the old life or do you want to take up the new life? It's a genius answer, isn't it? I heard this from Dibhamrita Swami, this quotation. There's a prayer. My dear super soul, please let me chant. Let me never forget to chant. Prabhupada has given this prayer. My dear super soul or Paramatma, or the devotee will turn to Krishna in his heart. My dear Lord Krishna in my heart, please remind me to chant always. Remind me to chant always. Please do not let me forget. Because the super soul sometimes can give you the choice. What do you want? My dear devotees, now I will talk some Krishna Katha and then bring it to the end. I want to tell you a little bit about, emotional fulfillment in Sanskrit means rasa, a type of mellow taste. Spiritual rasa has been defined by a very, very famous verse. What is rasa? That which is beyond imagination, heavy with wonder, and always and relished in the heart, shining with goodness, such is known as rasa. You know, when we hear about Krishna, sometimes we hear things which are beyond our wildest imagination. Have you heard these things? For me it is, you know, when I've quoted this millions of times, but it's still so nice. Once Yatila, the stepmother of Srimati Radharani, storms into the room where Shishi Radha and Krishna are together. And Krishna just has the split second time to disappear. But his fragrance is still in the air. Yatila smells it, and then on top of smelling his sweet fragrance, he sees on the couch of her Srimati Radharani the unique singular flute of Krishna. No one has a flute. No one else has such a flute. And she goes, wah-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha, because the smell, you know, one could say, maybe it was just some champak flower, maybe something, or but the flute, she jumps on the flute and says, I have it. The corpus delicti, the proof that Krishna is together with my very chaste, my very unchaste stepdaughter. Now, and she runs out to Vrindavan, on the marketplace, and with the flute, and it makes a huge powwow. Must happen in Yavat. In Yavat, she goes in Yavat, calls every one of the townspeople together and says, "See, I found this. It's not that I'm crazy, or I know that Krishna, the son of Nanda, our king, is together with my married stepdaughter, who is married with my son." and we need to now do this, make a revolution against Nanda Maharaj, or I don't know what is in her mind. You know, here is the flute. I found the flute. Do you recognize the flute? Oh, the devotees look at the flute. There is a very grave silence. Into the silence steps Purnamasi and said, Yatila, you are extremely foolish. Why do you always give unnatural explanations for everything? The natural explanation is that this night there was a flute rain in all over Vrindavan, and on every couch there is a flute. This is the highly natural explanation. Don't go to unnatural explanations. Vrishabhasis, don't be deceived by this envious fool. Look at your own couches or beds, and you will see flutes of Krishna there. It's a flute rain. Very, very ordinary phenomena. And they all go and all have a flute. This is something which is called, this is beyond imagination. Rasa is always beyond imagination. It's not something, you know, it's too, it's just beyond imagination. Heavy with wonder. Wow, Krishna is so wonderful. He makes a flute rain. Who could have thought about this? And it is relished in the heart, which is not tamasic and rajasic, but which is shining with goodness. In order to appreciate rasa or the transcendental pastimes of Krishna, you must be free from rajagun and tamagun if you really want to be appreciated as it is. But of course, when you hear it, hear it by a careful reciter who doesn't wake the wrong sankskaras in his audience, hearing about Krishna in a responsible way also wipes away tamas and rajas. Yes. Okay. After having said that Krishna is the only one who can fill our own our craving for fulfillment, because he is Rasaraj, the Lord of Rasa, which can fulfill us beyond our imaginations and which can fill us with a sense of astonishment and wow, nectar. You know, I want to take you now into Franz Kafka's writing. Franz Kafka is a Czech author who has who has once touched in his writing mundane rasa. Franz Kafka wrote about a young revolutionary who was captured by the police and then brought to a place of execution. The whole town came on that place because they wanted to see, you know, the human beings always like cruelty. That's why the movie industry has always some tomato ketchup, you know, to imitate blood. In other words, shows a violent scene, because that is one of the rasas, the 12 rasas, which is, I believe, let me see, what is it? Vibhatsa, yeah, Vibhatsa. Mm-hmm. Vibhatsa. It's disgust, something like that. Ah, you feel. That's why. So the whole town is there. The young revolutionary is going. He has no shirt on because he will be executed. And he goes over to the guillotine. Everyone looks at him. Everyone is there. And now they begin to react. The men, they think, wow, he really lived for his ideals. Other people think, what a criminal. He has raised his voice against the state. There are young women who don't have eyes for the political background. They only see the young revolutionary's bare-chested body and think, only for one night, only for one night, only for one night, before they execute him. I want to have him. Mothers cry because, oh, he could be my son. And everyone reacts now differently to this until the young revolutionary gets executed. I will not comment it. You will have to wonder why I told you this. You have to solve the mystery yourself. This is a mysterious part of my lecture, I admit, but I will not explain it to you. I will now change abruptly the subject, and I will take you to Mathura. When Krishna came to Mathura, he was not an unknown person. Many news had come to Mathura about King Nanda's extraordinary beautiful and powerful son. But as he appeared before the Mathura Vasis, they were amazed because Krishna's seeing Krishna defied all the descriptions. Their eyes were drinking in Krishna's form. With their arms, they were thinking of embracing him. With their nostrils, they smelled Lord Krishna, and they said, "Here is Krishna," and began to speak Krishna Katha. Krishna, one of his first exploits in Mathura was that he went to a washerman who washed the king's cloth, and he had all his cloth there. And Krishna came to this display of cloth, looked at it, and said, "Give me this and give me that." The washerman said, "What is in your mind, young boy? These are the king's cloth." Krishna said, "I want them." Now an old drama comes to a high point. When he was Rama, when Krishna was Rama, that same person who was now the washerman for King Kamsa was making a rumor about Sita's chastity. He had said in Ram Leela to his wife who was missing one night, "I don't accept you. Who knows, maybe you were at another man's house." No, Pati. I'm not like Lord Rama, who accepted Sita when she came from Ravan's house. Rascal. This man was born as a washerman of Kamsa. Krishna looked at him and said, "I want this." And it was the royal garb. The washerman said, "No." Krishna just went to him, not forgetting anything. He took his hand and went, and mercifully did some anatomical correction. Yes. Then Lord Krishna carefully walked on, and there was another servant of King Kamsa. It was a maiden called Kupya who was hunchbacked. She went like this. She had a plate full of sandalwood which she wanted to supply, which she was daily supplying for Kamsa's physical ornamentation. Krishna said, when she saw Krishna, she was overwhelmed with cupidity and felt like pulling on the dhoti, which is a very clear sign of her desire to be with Lord Krishna. And Krishna looked at her and said, this is sandalwood? Yes, she said, I'm supplying it daily for the king. Oh, please supply it for me and Balaram. Kubja couldn't believe her ears. She took the sandalwood and smeared it lovingly over the beautiful form of Lord Krishna. Krishna then simply took her bones, cheekbones, and gave her a jerk and did another anatomical correction. He gave her a straight back and then said, I will visit you later. Fulfill your desire. Then Krishna went to a very big sacrificial arena where there was a bow, the bow of was it Lord Shiva's bow? Yeah, the bow of Lord Shiva, which was there for display. It was a very religious display at the Yakya place where Yakyas were made. Krishna just took the bow and how is it? Strung it and then broke it. So that it made a very, very direct noise which could be heard in Kamsa's quarter. Pang it made, and this noise announced to Kamsa, here is Krishna. He has safely arrived in the town. I'm here for you. So then Kamsa, of course, had invited Krishna. He had arranged a wrestling arena, which was something like a coliseum. Coliseum, do you know what are coliseums? They are people, good, you know. So he had arranged the biggest wrestlers of the time who were ready to... and he had invited Krishna to fight with these wrestlers. Kamsa's idea was that Krishna would be killed by these wrestlers. On the entrance to the sacrificial arena, to make sure that Krishna maybe could be killed already before wrestling, he had placed a wild demonic elephant, a very, very demonic elephant named Kuvalayadapida. And when Krishna came to enter the wrestling arena, the elephant's caretaker had guided Kuvalayadapida in such a way that Kuvalayadapida charged Krishna to trample him down with his feet and destroy him. Krishna, however, had killed Kuvalayadapida, and he had taken one of the tusks, yes, and he took it over the shoulder, and now he was ready for his entree. There was enlivening music in the arena. All the townspeople were ready to, everyone was waiting for Krishna. They had heard some noise before the gates. Now Krishna was marching through the gate. He has a had a wonderful lotus face. He was smiling like always. There were little red drops on the lotus, on his lotus face, and a little perspiration, that he looked like a lotus flower with the morning dew. And in this way, he and Balaram presented himself to the eagerly waiting masses who were sitting in the Colosseum of Kamsa. It was a wonderful scene. The Lord went in like a ray of light. Everyone was totally flabbergasted and started to immediately go into Krishna Katha. The first one to speak with Krishna was Chanura. Chanura was the top wrestler, a very hefty demon, very cruel, and he said to Krishna, we all know what is the truth. Now the demon speaks. The truth is what the king says. Let's have a wrestling experience, Krishna. Krishna, who thought I should give some Dharma Shiksha, said, I don't think it is correct because we are not properly matched. We are boys from the forest, we wrestle amongst ourselves, but not against such hefty, trained wrestlers as you. It's a childhood place. We are not profis, you are the profis. It's unfairly matched wrestling game. Chanura became intolerant. Krishna, we know who you are. You just killed Kuvala Yadapida. Let's wrestle. So when Krishna was there in the wrestling arena, and this is now my point where I want to come to, and I hope that you will now give a special service by giving your special attention. There were various groups of people in the arena who saw Krishna in an entirely different way as he entered with Balaram. And I believe that this scene which unfolds now before our ears and hopefully our inner eyes will tell you a little bit why we can say that Krishna can fulfill everyone's desire. Because you will see how they see everyone. The wrestlers, who like strong people, saw Krishna as a lightning bolt, very strong. The men of Mathura, you know, the gentlemen, as the best of males. The women as Cupid in person. The cowherd men as their relative. The impious rulers as a chastiser, you know, these kings and under-kings and underdogs and overdogs. They saw him as a, he is really strong, he can correct us for our mistakes. His parents saw him as a little child. And the king of the Bojas, that's Kamsa, saw him as death. The unintelligent as the Supreme Lord's universal form. You know, they were blinded. And the yogis, they saw Krishna as the absolute truth, whereas the Vrishnis saw him as the supreme worshipable deity. There's other descriptions of Rupa Goswami that his mother wept warm tears, you know, that Krishna's friends who saw Krishna, they just laughed, hey Sakha, you are here, and we have seen you fighting with Agasura, the Chanura, no problem, haha, Sakha, you really know how to pull the attention towards you, don't you? Ha ha ha. And you know, everyone saw him. Now, does this remind you of a story which you have heard earlier? It reminds you. Acha. Now, the difference between the revolutionary hero and Krishna is vast. Krishna can not only invoke mundane rasas, but Krishna can also invoke spiritual rasas. And I want to highlight this a little bit. As we hear about Krishna, as we absorb ourselves in Krishna, in the beginning, because we are not on the level of Vishuddha Sattva, which is a prerequisite for tasting transcendental rasa, we will only see Krishna as wonderful. I want to, you know, like an Indian in the Air India, he saw me reading a book, or spiritual book, and said, yeah, Krishna is our national god. That's a mundane feeling. Krishna is certainly not a part of he's not a nationalist of India. Krishna is Ishvara Parama Krishna. He's Jagannath. He's the Lord of all the universes, not a national, provincial folklore god, country god. But when even a person approaches Krishna with such a, how would you say, mundane feeling, because he engages a thought on Krishna, he will, provided he has heard about Krishna from proper sources, develop eventually transcendental rasas. That's why it is so important, my dear devotees, that you stick with your line of teaching, where Krishna is presented to you in one consistent way. For instance, we are hearing the Rupanuga perspective of Krishna, and we want to hear it, and as disciples of Srila Prabhupada and grand disciples, we wish to hear it by Krishna in a way which is consistent to our spiritual education, so that slowly we are broadening our scope of understanding, which doesn't happen by contradictory but by complementary information. So let's return to the original question: can Krishna fulfill my individual desires for love? The answer is, in one way, I have two answers. My first answer is, Krishna does sometimes appear to devotees who are in this world, first of all by his non-appearance. Please don't think this is too paradoxical. It is not. By letting the devotee wait, or by hiding a little, Krishna will bring about the much needed spiritual transformation. He will evoke, in other words, the feeling of eagerness. I must have you, Krishna. Without you, this world is a desert. Please, my dear Krishna, accept my service and become pleased to me, pleased with me, with me. In Krishna, however, also does appear to the sadhaka in other ways. Krishna appears to the sadhaka in the form of the deity and in the form of the holy name, and he will give the devotees, the sadhakas, through these forms, merciful signs and inspirations and assurance of his presence. I think you all have done so when we are in the nice kirtans and the lila katas of our Burijan Prabhuji. Prabhu, then we feel something. Oh yes, how wonderful Krishna is, no? So Krishna does appear. Another way Krishna does appear is that he will first give us some type of experience of rasa, and this rasa then will become transcendental rasa as we become fully purified, and Krishna can appear. But already something is something. I remember there was one god sister who would sometimes cry for Krishna, and we all thought, what a sentimental god sister. She cannot possibly cry for Krishna in a real way. It must be some psychological mixture, some hippie crying, maybe the husband has left, or some residue of the LSD which was incorporated in some cell has sprung up again and done this. So Prabhupada was asked about this. Her name was Lilavati. And Prabhupada said, good. She had something else. It's good that you start already crying for Krishna. Yes. Although, you know, he, and later you will cry more. Somewhere we must begin. Let us return to our question. By asking now a different question. Whoops, now it gets really difficult. The question is, can Krishna fulfill my individual desires for love? I want to now ask another question. I want to ask the question, who, by the way, is fulfilled in this world? When you say it in English like this, by the way, it sounds like a challenge, almost indicating that I don't want to express. I simply want to ask the question, who is fulfilled in this world? Someone has an idea? What is an emotionally fulfilled person? How does he eat? How does he sleep? Or how do we recognize him? Please, those who know the answer, don't say it. I want some cliffhanger now. Nanda, I think you somehow, I intuitively feel that you know the answer because you're from America. You will soon see why those who are from America have good chances to know the answer. Who is fulfilled? He's open. He's free. He loves. What is he? What type of person is he?
Smile.
Yeah, I'm just repeating. Smile. What? Smile on his face. Govindananda says a fool is fulfilled. He thinks he is fulfilled. Mm-hmm. It's a total different answer. My dear devotees, the American government gave made a serious investigation into emotional fulfillment, because they could see we have this civilization called American way or unway, and no one is satisfied. People are not yet satisfied. Now let us see if we, in general, let us see if we find some satisfied people, and then, you know, let us find out their secret. And they went all through the countries interviewing, investigating, psychoanalyzing, and so on. And finally they came up that those people who serve others, they are the most fulfilled people. That was the result, the breathtaking, hair-raising, shocking result of the me generation in America. We got it all wrong. We always think of us as us, and we are not fulfilled. But now we find out those happy fools who serve others are really happy. This is what I have heard. Nanda, have I said it? I have said it a little bit, maybe in an embellished way, but it is, the essence is there, no? Yes, our Nanda, who is from America, has confirmed. Yes. This, by the way, is and remains the secret of Krishna consciousness. If you want to enter rasa with Krishna, there's only one rasa which you can practice in this world and where you can already feel satisfaction in this world, even if you are not in Vishuddha Sattva or Sutta Sattva, and that's the Dasya rasa. This is explained by Nityananda Prabhu to Jiva Goswami when he gives him a Navadvip Parikrama. And this can be also found in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, 7th chapter of the Adi Lila, where you see Advaita Acharya jumping up and down and declaring, I am a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Advaita Acharya did anything and everything in the world in order to achieve that Lord Chaitanya would deal with him as a master does with his servant. Lord Chaitanya considered Advaita Acharya generally older and respected him. And once Advaita Acharya went to such an extent to break Lord Chaitanya's reference that he gave a Mayavadi reading of the Yoga Vashishta Shastra in his house. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard from it, about it, went into in a great fury and arrived like with blazing eyes before his house. He violently interrupted the lecture and said, "Tell me one thing, Acharya, what is higher, bhakti or jnana?" Advaita Acharya had waited for this. He had carefully prepared this moment. And he said, "Jnana." And this Mahaprabhu pounced like a lion on him, beat him to the ground and started striking him with his transcendent and loving fists. Mother Sita said, "He's an old man, he will die." At that time he was about 72 years on this planet. Lord Chaitanya was young. And Advaita Acharya was crying in bliss. "Finally, the Lord has accepted me as his servant and him as his master." And in this chapter, you will find how all the devotees and all the rasas in Vrindavan are really always having one mood, the mood of service. The gopis, Mother Yashoda Nanda Maharaj want to serve Krishna. The gopis want to serve Krishna. The sakas want to serve Krishna. Yes, there is a scene where Lord Krishna carries Subal on his shoulder, and above Subal, on Subal's shoulder, is Sridham. Lord Krishna carries two sakas. It's a heavy weight. And he is directed by them, "Forward, forward, Karna, forward." And then Sridham says, "Yes, I got it." And Sridham picks what he wanted, a fruit, and then eats it. "Okay. Yes, Karna, you can eat it. It's all right." Then he passes it to Subal, the fruit. Subal says, "I'm not sure we can give this to Krishna." "Tike." "It's all right." And then they give this to Krishna. They do this in order to serve Krishna. They don't want to enjoy the fruit separate from Krishna. They do this to serve Krishna. To Krishna. This is the mood in all the rasas. And this is the rasa which we can learn. Enthusiastic service. And my dear devotees, if you consider carefully Srila Prabhupada's presentation of Krishna consciousness, you will find that this is the point which Prabhupada always makes, and which the Hare Krishna people always don't believe. Serve. When you chant, sit down to serve. When you hear, sit down to serve. When you preach, don't do it for self-aggrandizement. Serve Krishna. By doing this, you become generally happy in this world and beyond this world. We have reached the end. May I look? Can you look at the wristwatch, Govinda Nandan? 5:15. Very good. Yes, I have reached my end. I'm out of subject. I don't know anything to say any longer. It's a very important subject matter. And I want to give you a little summary. Don't worry, it's not a big summary. Today we were asking a question: can Krishna fulfill my individual desire for love? We were hearing about the perspective of Jiva and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And then we were going into Krishna, one of Krishna's character traits. He wants to evoke the emotions in his devotees. That is what he always does. And very often, I gave just one example. He evokes the emotions through sometimes hiding. And I gave you a very nice passage from Krishna book. At such a time, I feel when we are unfulfilled, we turn towards, we make a cardinal mistake and turn to the material energy. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says we should not nourish our material aspects of our personality, but we should nourish the spiritual aspect of our personality. We need to choose, in other words, and it is Krishna in the form of the super soul who always puts us before a choice. Learn to choose for Krishna, my dear devotees. This is something you have to learn. It's something you have to practice throughout the day. Kana Kapcha, this evening, when you are in the Leela Katha, you can choose consciously, I will listen and not switch off when Burijan Prabhu tells the Leela. It's something you have to practice. It's something which you might have to practice almost, you know, I always like to give this example.
We are in Vrindavan, we can be a little unconventional. Oh, it's on video.
Sorry. I'm sorry, I did not think of the video. I always wanted to do this, but in the Western temple, then you are thrown out. But here, Raj, it's all right. When you are not practiced, like me, I do everything else except for push-ups because I don't need it in my life. You do 3.5 or 4. I really came to my limits with 3.5. But when you are practiced, you do... Like Jai Gopal, he can do 500, I think. No? This is not in Vedanga practice. There are, you know, so... Yeah, not good to reveal one sadhana, yes. So this practice of choice is a practice which you can start with already after the class. You can decide, no, I make a choice to, in the Krishna direction. And if you learn this, my dear devotees, it will come so automatically that finally you are like Guda Kirsh, like Arjuna, who chanted the names of Krishna even in his sleep. It came automatically because he was habituated to chant. Do you know that is why he was called Gudakesh, the conqueror of sleep? Because he chanted Krishna, 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 Krishna. Prabhupada is also like this, you know, when they gave an operation to him and he was under anesthesia, he continued to chant. You must practice your freedom of choice. You must get some muscles, some choice muscles. So then I took you to Franz Kafka and told you what is material rasa, a little story. Then I took you to the arena of Lord Krishna to tell you that Krishna is different because the rasa of Krishna is described in this verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That which is beyond all imagination, heavy with wonder, and relished in the heart, shining with goodness, such is known as rasa. That will come as we become more advanced, then we can enter the spiritual rasa. But what I wanted to say in the beginning, when you engage your mind with Krishna, you will come to that level. You will increase your spiritual aspect of your personality and will rise towards real spiritual fulfillment. Now, on the way to doing this and looking for emotional fulfillment, all the scriptures give us one advice. Sadhu Sangha, practice association with devotees. There you can get a lot of emotional fulfillment, which is the subject matter of another... Well, I will not talk on this now. I'm preparing for those of you who are my fans. Please excuse me, Giriraj, I went a little overboard. I said sometimes I do this. I'm very sorry. This is very arrogant and so on. What I mean to say, I'm very interested in this and I'm working on a presentation called Emotions in Krishna Consciousness and want to deal research on this. I'm still in the research category. I'm not yet ready to give this, but it's always said the good emotional fulfillment can happen in devotional association. So that was the summary. I will now